The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. During the course of this hour, we're going to be talking about the playground at the Weinberg Y and what happened to that. Remember, it burned down. Look at gay marriage, and then Dr. Andres Alonso, our CEO of City Schools, joins us. We have a wonderful 2 hours ahead of us. Before we get there, I want to remind you that support for WEAA traffic is provided by Fram, offering a Fram Extra Guard filter for engine protection.
Pulaski Highway eastbound after 895 for a crash in the city with this check on the roads brought to you by Caltrate. 95 northbound after White Marsh Boulevard accident there blocking the shoulder. Closure continues Bel Air Road both ways between Sunshine Avenue and Mountain Road. It's a crash with pole and wires down. Try Philadelphia Road, Harford Road, or the Pulaski Highway instead. Interloop of the Beltway, some minor slowing west side, 95 to 70. Delays in place, Charles Street to Paring Parkway. In Baltimore County, Liberty at Liberty Ridge Court, crash just west of Ward's Chapel Road. Delaney Valley at Fairmount for another accident, this one in Towson. And in Anne Arundel County, a crash Severn Road at Disney Road. Caltrate, get a little TLC every day. Tender, loving Caltrate. Caltrate has essential daily calcium, plus advanced levels of vitamin D to help you absorb that TLC. I'm Joanna Campbell with Baltimore Area Traffic.
I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome once again. On September 9th of last year, we talked on the air about a real tragedy, which was the playground at the Weinberg Y that was burnt down through arson. And the sad thing about it was a community playground. It was burned down right in front of where young children are in daycare. It was a place that brought the entire community together, black, white, wealthy, working class, all kinds of people, young and old, together to build that playground, and it was burned to the ground. Well, knowing the community energy that lives in and around that Y, that wasn't going to last long, and the rebuilding process is beginning. So we thought only appropriate, since we talked so much about it on the day that it was burned down, to talk about its rebirth. We're joined in studio by Marisa Canino, who is Deputy Director of Chesapeake Habitat for Humanity and President of Friends of Our Playground, and Mel Brennan, who's director of the Weinberg Y over on 33rd Street, where Memorial Stadium used to sit, but now the Weinberg Y sits there. And Mel and Marisa, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you.
It's great to be here.
And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. Perhaps you're one of the volunteers. Perhaps you go to that Y. Perhaps that's your community. Perhaps you just have an interest. 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. So what is happening? So is it being rebuilt now, or are you just beginning?
We're in deep planning. We are getting ready to rebuild May 5th through 10th, and so it's less than a month away.
5 days.
6 days.
6 days. That's how good my math is.
Yeah. 6 days of basically dawn to dusk construction with hundreds of volunteers every day. It's the same model for folks who were involved at the original time. It's the same model we use. The same company that planned the build the first time is coming back to rebuild with us. And it's going to be a fantastic experience for people to come and do something in their community and really make a difference to get the playground back up.
And Mel Brennan, talk a bit about this in terms of its pragmatic and philosophical sense about what the Weinberg and the Y stand for and why this playground is so important and how it all ties together.
Well, you know, the playground, when it was up and running, was, as you said, emblematic of how the community could come together and experience play, free play for young people together. The rebuild is reflective of that same approach and philosophy. Of course, the Y, when we looked at a project like this, said, you know, this actual activity builds community. And that's the raison d'etre for us to be there in that community. So the rebuild process is about people coming together and crafting something in their own space and place that they can look back and look with their kids and their grandkids and say, we did that. And the Y is happy and enthusiastic to facilitate that. That's it. The playground is one of a spectrum of pieces that we do for young people, and that's what we're all about. So.
And that Y, we were talking before we went on the air and come back to talk about the playground and get people to come out and all work together out there to build this thing. The spirit of that Y is so interesting. It's so different than most other places I've ever worked out or gone to, whether it's been a Y or at just any old gym, any place, you know, because it cuts across age lines. I mean, you see older folks, Asian, white and black, with all these young kids with their pants down to their knees to everybody in between, class-wise, race-wise, men and women, all working together in that place. That's a really unique experience. That doesn't happen often enough.
It doesn't, and it's empowering to work there and work in that environment because you do get the benefit of life cycle experiences. You get to see young people on the playground. You get to see our active older adults engaging our teens. We don't have the separation of the generations that is emblematic of what's going on in society today. You see it coming together.
Yeah.
And the way that people have come together around this project is also reflective of that.
So, Marisa, what's going on there and what you all are looking for? I mean, how are you getting the word out and who's going to come rebuild this? And
We're hoping that there's going to be a lot of people from the immediate community rebuilding this. The thing that was so great about when this was originally built is that we had what you're expressing about the Y. We had people from all walks of life, from the immediate neighborhoods, from out in the county, coming from all different places to come together to build this because they knew it was important for the children in the community. And we hope to get back that whole assortment of people again for the rebuild. But we're really focusing on folks who live in the community because we want to make sure that they know that this is theirs. And this was planned by and for the community, you know, back 8 years ago when it was just somebody's idea, when it was built in 2005 before the Y was even standing there. And we're so glad to have them as our partner in the rebuild. But we want to make sure that this is a really grassroots effort driven by the folks who live in the community and use the playground every day.
So you don't need carpentry skills. You don't have to know how to use a power tool to do this. Who are you looking for?
We're looking for, Marissa will probably get more detail on this, but we're looking for everybody. We love folks with carpentry and power tool skills.
Yeah, I mean, Mel's right. There's definitely something for everyone, but we need folks who know how to use a circular saw, use power tools. A certain percentage of our workforce every day does need to be somewhat skilled. We classify skilled as, you know, how to cut a straight line with a circular saw. That's sort of our litmus test. Mm-hmm. So, and those folks are sometimes harder to find. And so that's what we're putting the word out for most, to make sure that we can really have the skill we need so that we can stay on schedule and get it done, because 6 days isn't really that long. It's got to go quick and it's got to stay on schedule.
So why do you have to do this in 6 days? Is this a biblical thing? No, I'm just kidding.
The community process is facilitated by an organization that we that was involved last time, and their community framework, the way that they lead it, allows us to come together and cluster around certain activities, and that takes about 6 days. It allows us to say to volunteers, hey, let's get the word out to you early enough so that you can schedule your work schedule and your life schedule around this small window of time in which we can get this whole project done. So,
and who are you expecting to come out, and how are they going to get? I mean, how are you expecting this to work?
How are we expecting the build to work?
Yeah,
We are going to have three shifts every day. So there's a morning, afternoon, and evening shift. And, you know, folks are going to come in and do what needs to be done. In terms of signing up, the best way for folks to sign up, if I can stick our website
out there. That's what you're supposed to do. That's
We have online sign-up, so it's real easy if folks are at a computer. It's stadiumplayground.org, and you go and you click the I Want to Volunteer button, and you sign up for one of the shifts. It asks you if you're skilled or unskilled, and it sort of just filters you into a spot.
Is that how it happened before? How did the volunteers get there before? It seemed to me people just came and signed up, or is that not?
Some people just showed up, and that'll probably happen this time as well, but we really do best when we know who's coming in advance so we can make sure that we're planning the right amount of work and we know really when our peaks are going to be, because we want people to be busy. We want to make sure they have a really rewarding experience. So planning in advance is definitely key. The first time around, We did a lot of phone signups, and we were still signing up in advance like we are now. We didn't quite have the technology piece as well sorted out as we do this time.
And no doubt, if you're unable or uninterested in the technology piece, you can walk right into the Weinberg Y at 900 East 33rd Street and sign up at the front desk. So for those of you that are battling with the internet, then that's fine too. We can come on over to the Weinberg Y and sign up. I don't want to miss out on the piece that I want to make sure we say that we also provide child care during these shifts. Don't let the fact that you've got to manage some young ones keep you, particularly if you participated last time and want to participate again, don't let that keep you from coming back out to get involved in this project.
Bring or don't bring your young ones?
You can bring your young ones. I think that's part of the sign-up process.
Yeah, it is.
And so that we can get a gauge on how many young ones we're going to have. But you can bring those, and we'll get them involved in the Y Sport activity out there on the Memorial Stadium field. So we look forward to having those folks as well.
We have an email from Tom Wilcox, who is the president of the Baltimore Community Foundation, just wrote in saying, "I'm thrilled that you're covering the playground story tonight. Listeners who are not able to contribute time can share their resources through Rebuild Our Playground at the Baltimore Community Foundation. It can be found at bcf.org. So we'll put that up on our website as well. You can help any number of ways to help rebuild this playground. And it is a huge community effort. It's community-wide. It's not to say people who live in that neighborhood. The last time this happened, as you said, Marisa, that people came from Baltimore County, they came from all over. They came all over the city to help put their backs and skills and work into building a playground for the children in that community on 33rd Street. So we will put all this stuff will be on our website. It can be found at bcf.org, and you can share your resources in other ways. Rebuilding Our Playground at BCF, so you can do that, and you can call. You also can write in it. Website again:
stadiumplayground.org.
And so, I mean, you could expect like dozens and dozens, maybe hundreds of people coming out, as they did last time, right?
Yeah, there are just about 2,000 shifts to be filled. And so if we hope that volunteers will come back for multiple shifts, but if we had a different person in every slot, we'd have about 2,000 volunteers touch our site over the course of 6 days. It's huge. It's really something to be seen. I'd encourage people just to come down and look at what's going on, even if they're not able to build with us.
So you can get them all to be members at the Y?
Get them all to be members at the Y. I mean, volunteerism is what is needed throughout the city, and particularly in the endeavors that we have with regard to our young people. Volunteers for the playground, volunteers for the playground rebuild, volunteers for the playground when it's up and running in terms of the programmatic efforts that we want to do for these kids on that playground space.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, volunteers for all of the work that we're trying to do with our young people, from achievers to A-teams to the new fields project that we're trying to get up and running. We have a send a kid to camp program that's going on right now, and of course the camp uses the playground for some of their age participants.
You need to get that ready for summer.
We got to have it ready for summer, and you know that the community is going to be ready to use it for summer as well. So
number is 410-319-8888 as we explore the rebuilding of the playground at the Weinberg Y. And if you haven't seen it, you can just drive by and take a look on 33rd Street. It was an amazing place, this playground that was built. It's a great Y. The entire community was there building it. I can remember coming down when people were there working and building the playground when it was first constructed. It was just really a sight to see all kinds of people just together gathered to build this beautiful place for our children. And we want to encourage all of you to sign up, come down, join all of us, pick up a hammer, pick up a saw, carry some wood, and help us build this playground. So, like, any other messages before we go out to make sure people understand exactly what we are wanting them to do?
Well, I mean, I would say the short message is that we need volunteers, but I'm so grateful that Tom called because we do need money too. There are some expenses to be covered with the rebuild, but really what we need money for is looking ahead and making sure that we are providing youth development opportunities on the playground like we really value, making sure that we have staffing on the playground during the really heavy months and that maintenance is taken care of. So any donations that aren't maybe needed right now, as we lead up to the rebuild, are needed the day after so we can make sure we keep it up and running.
So this is really important. So you go to bcf.org, and you can look for Rebuild Our Playground at BCF, and you can contribute funds to help in this process, because it costs money to build a playground. It costs our volunteer sweat and time, and it costs money to build it. And it's for the children of this neighborhood, in one of the rare places in our community where people cross racial and cultural and class lines and age lines and come together to work out and be part of this Y. And it is a huge, really, really, really important community effort. And we'll have all this stuff on our website. And we look forward to I look forward to swinging the hammer with y'all.
Excellent.
Look forward to it.
I'll be there. So we've been joined by Marisa Canino, who is Deputy Director of the Chesapeake Habitat for Humanity. She's also President of Friends of Our Playground. And Mel Brennan, who is the Director of the Weinberg Y. And we are really looking forward to this community effort. We'll all be part of that. And we want you to be part of it as well. I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still there to help people during difficult times. More information is available at MECU.com. Reminding we come back, we're going to begin a different conversation. Vermont passed the same-sex marriage, so people of the same sex can be married in Vermont. Washington, D.C. just acknowledged those marriages in Washington, D.C. There are pushes in several of the states to make this pass on the state legislatures, and the war is back on. We'll talk about that with our guests. You can join us with your thoughts. We'll be right back, so don't go away. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. I neglected to say at the top of the hour. We'll say it again at the bottom of the hour. I want to wish everyone who is celebrating Passover tonight a happy Passover on your first night of Seder. It's not yet sundown. I'll get there. So when sundown comes, we'll be sitting down to our Seder, as many people will be in this community, and just wishing everybody a happy Passover who celebrates that holiday tonight and for the next eight nights. We're going to talk in this portion of our program about the law that was passed in Vermont that allows gay marriage. It was a override of a veto by the governor of Vermont. The law was just barely passed, just in terms of the number of votes that had to pass. It was 100-49, I believe, in the Vermont state legislature. New York, New Jersey, and a few other states are contemplating similar laws. The debate takes place here in Maryland as well, and has. There is a huge opposition in this country and in the state to what happened in Vermont. Washington, D.C. Passed a D.C. city council law that recognizes gay marriages when they take place anywhere in the country, and they're recognized now in Washington, D.C., which could take this debate into the federal, on the federal level, because the Congress could overturn that law. And so that debate could, and I'm sure will, take place in the House of Representatives. And when that does, we will certainly talk to all of our congressional representatives about their views on this. Six out of 10 people in America believe in some form of recognition for same-sex relationships. And a minority of people in America support, of that group, support same-sex marriage. And, of course, there is a federal law that denies benefits recognition of same-sex marriages. So it is a civil rights struggle in America that has been going on for quite some time, and we're going to tackle it this hour, this part of our hour. We're joined in studio by Kate Runyon, who is the Executive Director of Equality Maryland. Kate, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And joining us by phone is Doug Stigler, correct?
That's correct.
I'll make sure I had that right. Doug, yes. Stigler, who is Executive Director of the Family Protection Lobby. And all of you at 410-319-8888, 410-319-8888, join us for your thoughts on same-sex marriage, what happened in Vermont, what is being debated here in Maryland and around the country, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. We already have some emails come in, which we'll read in a few minutes as we get into this conversation. So let's talk about what this law means in Vermont, you know, to both of you, and why you're so passionate about it on either side. We'll start with Kate Runyon, then go to Doug Stickler.
Sure. Well, thanks. It's great to be here this afternoon with you. And Doug, I would like to say hi to you as well. I'm glad we're both here.
Kate.
Sure. So in Vermont, this is the very first time that we have moved forward in the nation with a state legislatively being able to move forward and bring civil marriage about. And so it's very exciting. It hasn't happened yet. And in Vermont in the past, there were civil unions, but that is different than civil marriage. This will be full equal rights for the people in Vermont that choose to move forward with same-sex marriage. So it's very exciting. And we look forward to supporting Vermont as they continue to integrate this in. And in September, they'll be able to start beginning to have marriages there.
And Doug Stickler, let's talk about why the Feminine Protection Lobby and others so vehemently oppose this and are upset about the passage of this law.
Well, we just see it as a diminishment of the definition of marriage, as we see has been, you know, since the beginning of time, of one man and one woman. And while same-sex couples certainly have a right to do whatever they want to do as couples or as same-sex partners, we don't think that it should be infringing on the definition of marriage. It just changes all of culture, changes all of the concepts of what we believe marriage was created for, and that's the strengthening of culture, the strengthening of and giving children a good solid base to work from.
So let's talk about this whole question of definition of marriage. I think that is. Really key to all this. I mean, there are people who support civil unions but not marriage. And one of the things that came up in a conversation I had about this a few months ago on air in an interview was that all marriages really are civil, that we may have religious marriages, but you can't, the Catholic Church, the Jewish religion, or whatever religion it is that you're part of in America, can't divorce you. Only the state can recognize or divorce recognize a marriage or divorce. So there's a lot of questions around that. So what do we mean by marriage? I mean, and Kate, let me, you can respond to what Doug said. I'm just curious about this whole definition of marriage being a big piece of this issue, clearly.
Sure. Well, with marriage, it's very different than civil unions. We know what marriage means. It is defined on a federal level. We know how to deal with marriage in the court system. We know how to deal with marriage in regard to divorce as well, when children are a part of a relationship and there needs to be a division of assets that occurs when a relationship dissolves as well. And with civil unions, those are only focused on the state that they happen in. They're not transferable to another state or recognized within another state quite often as well. And there's some other large differences too, such as income tax. With a civil union, you would still only file your state returns you could file your state returns jointly, but not your federal returns. And so there's some big differences that happen between the two. And what we're really looking for is the ability to have civil marriage so that there can be full protection and rights and recognition for same-sex couples across the board. And if I were to be married with a girlfriend or partner here in Maryland, I would be able to take that bond that we have in a legal sense, and we could move to another state and have that recognized like a heterosexual couple. But with a civil union, that would not happen. And you mentioned what occurred yesterday in Washington, D.C. as well, as far as recognizing marriage from other states. It's similar in New York as well, where you can go and actually have a marriage performed in another state, and you're welcome to come back to that area, like D.C. hopefully will be shortly, and you will have your relationship recognized. So there's some really big differences, and we want to make sure that children are protected. We want to make sure that couples are well supported in their relationship, and we want to make sure that that folks can live as easily as they possibly can in relationships with two people together. These are two consenting adults that are choosing to be in this relationship status and go forward.
So on the way to the phones here, Doug Stickler, I mean, well, describe for me what you think would happen in the United States of America if same-sex marriages became the law of the land in most states in the United States.
Well, I think we've seen a lot of what's happening already. It's a deterioration of the concept of marriage and family.
What does that mean?
Throughout history, marriages have been condoned by cultures or tribes or groups of people groups, whatever, because they knew that that was the way the procreation took place. They knew that that was what made the community stable, was to have a husband and a wife, a man and a woman, raising the children that they bore between that relationship. And I know that the argument is, oh, well, some of them were multiple marriages, some of them had concubines, et cetera, et cetera. But still, the benefit is a man and a woman created children, and that created the concept of marriage. The definition that Kate's talking about is relatively new. I mean, it's you know, within America's culture, where we're defining it based on a civil basis. And, you know, my thinking and my understanding is the reason a lot of the civil laws were passed for marriage is to protect the family. When it was an agrarian society, you had a husband and a wife and the children living on a farm, and that was the way they work things. But when they had to get off the farm and had to come into the cities to start making money, and then there was insurance taxes and a lot of the laws started being made, the legislature saw the benefit of protecting the wife and the children. And so they started making these laws that created the civil ceremony type concept and the mm-hmm. idea of divorce. Now, the idea of divorce is not a new American legal system idea. That's been going on since the beginning of relationships. But when it got into what Kate's talking about is giving benefits to people and giving rights to property and et cetera, that was all done for the benefit of protecting the family.
But with the question, I guess what I have...
Now we're breaking that apart.
The question I have, though, for both of you, and then I'm going to open the phones here at 410-319-8888, your take on same-sex marriage, what it means if Vermont passed this law, what it means for the state of Maryland, who has been debating this for quite some time. That debate is not over. And there are other state legislatures that may be passing similar laws. The Iowa Supreme Court just recently decided that same-sex marriage was constitutionally legal in Iowa. So there are, and the battle still rages in California and many other places as well. So this is something that's at the heart of where America is headed in the 21st century.
It's at the heart of a lot of the judicial system, but it's not at the heart of the people, because the heart of the people in California, you know, voted very overwhelmingly to say that marriage is one man and one woman. They realize that any deviation from that deprives children, and it deprives children of either a mother or a father. And the state, whatever state it is, should not be saying to children who have no choice in the matter, who may not even been born at this point, you don't have a choice of having a mother and a father's relationship to bring you up and to raise you in a culture that should be protecting you. It just takes it out of that relationship.
Okay, let me respond to that, then I will open the phones here.
Sure. So, Doug, I want to go back to something you mentioned a minute ago, where we actually agree, fascinatingly enough, that marriage supports families and supports health and well-being, and marriage supports our society. And we currently, in our culture, we have lesbian and gay people and transgender people and bisexual people and many other folks already that currently exist within society. And what I want to make sure happens is that we continue to support the structure within society of family, and we make sure that children are protected in families and so forth. So we actually, in a strange kind of way, agree here.
But the question, I'm going to go to the phones here, sure. But what I'd like to kind of really explore is, and I'm trying to get my hands around this, we have in Maryland probably thousands of gay and lesbian couples who have children.
Very true.
In every community that I can think of in Maryland, I can't think of one that probably does not have people already who have children who are
every
raising
county.
Children.
Every county.
So the question is, then, if that's the case, and A, that, and I'll see what Doug, you think about this too, but that doesn't seem to be changing. Seems
Correct.
To be becoming more of a fact and not less. So how do you, if not marriage, then what happens. But let me open the phones here, then we'll come back and talk about that.
Sure.
410-319-8888. As we look at the world of same-sex marriage, and Leslie in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Leslie. You're on the air.
This is a very interesting topic. And first, I'd like to follow up on what the gentleman said. You know, I feel personally that, I mean, I don't have nothing against gay and lesbians or nothing like that personally. But I think that in terms of marriage and stuff like that, marriage goes back centuries. I mean, with eons and time. And see, even when you go back to the point where you talk about the Romans, even in history, where the Romans, they debauchery and stuff in those areas, man, you know, was is well documented. But at least they had the sense to not try to intermingle that type of activity with the idea of marriage between a man and a woman, because just like the gentleman said, you know, the whole idea of marriage is so is because of the fact of the procreation aspect of it. And I think that for the homosexual community to try to force feed something on me that, I mean, you're trying to force normalcy in a culture where really, you know, the only thing can really do is corrupt. And to me, it seemed like it just shows where we are in the 21st century, where, in one respect, the young lady would have us think that we are at a very positive and productive and pro-reactive position. But, you know, when you think in terms of what you ultimately going to be creating, I mean, what we're going to end up with is an asexual society.
All right, but Leslie, how would you respond? I mean, Leslie, sure. I'm sorry, excuse me. Kate, how would you respond?
No problem. Well, hi, Leslie. This is Kate.
Hi, Kate.
Hi. Oh, well, one thing that I would bring forward is that that we're looking for more stability within society and recognition and equal rights rather than going forward within society. I think you used the word decay? And so I guess I'm a little bit concerned about that, because the point is really to make sure that the folks that are currently in society are in more protected places with health benefits, and that children have health coverage, and that if a partner dies, that they do not have to pay an inheritance tax for the home that they've lived in with their partner for many years. All of these things. So in many ways, what we're really looking to move towards is recognizing a group of people that already exist within society and are probably folks that you've interacted with throughout your life and maybe not even realized it, but we want to make more stability occur within society and greater strength for benefits and so forth.
Leslie, thanks for the call. And Doug, let me ask you this question. I mean, if what we said earlier and what Kate was touching on, if there are already tens of thousands probably of families of gays and lesbians who have children in America and have property together and live together, then what protects that? Should it be protected? And isn't that kind of, is that something that probably is not going to change or diminish in the society?
Well, we keep talking about the tens of thousands of potential gay and lesbian couples that have children, but when we don't look at the numbers, gay and lesbians, as everything that I've seen, is we're talking about 3% of the population. Not all of them are married. Not all of them want to be married. Not all of them have children. So we're talking about less than maybe 2% of the population. So we're turning it on its ear and saying that 98% of the population has got to accept what 2% of the population has decided is right and fair for them, when it's only making a fairness and putting into a legal system a behavior, you know, not something that has been a normal, natural existence. And Kate mentioned, you know, the health aspect of it. Homosexual sex is not a healthy endeavor, and that's just a scientific fact. You look at all the statistics that are there, and I know there are homosexual couples that are monogamous,
that live together, that are doing as best job they can, et cetera, et cetera. And I understand that, and I've met some of them and talked with them and shared with them, and that's true. But it's such a small minority of the population, and this has become an overwhelming issue in society, and too many people in society have not thought through the issue. They get caught by the rhetoric of fairness and equality, and you know, even the name of the organization, Equality Maryland. It sounds like it ought to be, and but it's changing everything that we believe in our culture, and in not only our culture, but in cultures for like Leslie said, for eons. And you look at the European example. Some of those countries that have had same-sex marriage in them are now saying, "Hey, we made a mistake. It's not working. It's not good for the families. It's not good for the healthcare system. It's not good for culture." Well, and they're saying, "How do we undo this thing now?" And it's really tough to put a horse back in a barn or smoke back in a bottle. You know?
And we have a lot of callers, but let me just say that the most conservative estimates I've seen about and the argument about statistics is that mm-hmm. at least 10% of the population of any population is homosexual.
No, that's a number that was the homosexuals that came up with that number back in the 60s or 70s said that it was.
Well, I've seen more, but I mean, trying to just stay in the middle here, I've seen like a lot of very objective studies out of universities mm-hmm. and places that say that, but also in Maryland, the 2000 census, there were 15,600 same-sex couples mm-hmm. in the census in every county in the state, and 21% of those had children. In those relationships.
And what percentage of that is the total population of Maryland?
It's, well, I mean, most people wouldn't admit to being gay or think of mm-hmm. lesbian in society because it's such a stigma. Let me open the phones back here and come back to both of you. 410-319-8888. Don in Baltimore, you're on the air. Hi, Don, you there? Did we lose Don? 410-319-8888. Let's go to Nikki in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to make a comment about the gentleman who spoke earlier about marriage protecting the family and protecting children. I think that it's not fair to say that opening up marriage to gay people would be a threat to families or children because there are many people who choose to be in heterosexual relationships and have children, and those people would not be affected by this marriage law. If anything, I'm concerned that what would be affected is the open-mindedness of our society. I think that we've come very far in accepting people of different ethnic backgrounds. I think it's excellent that we have an African-American president, and I think that teaching our children that it's wrong to or that it's right to discriminate, I think that that's going to just further push us back in, you know, the fight for equality and having everybody to have equal rights. And as far as, like, taxes and everything goes, you know, I'm a tax-paying citizen, and I'm paying tax money that goes towards schools and so forth for other people's children to, you know, go to school, and I think it's only fair that I'm offered the same choice as a tax-paying citizen to be able to be in a loving relationship and have children that get to use that system as well.
Doug, you want to answer that first before we go to break? A very quick response, then we're going to take a quick break and come back to the phones here.
Well, a comment that she may just made that homosexuality is an ethnic issue, and homosexuality is not an ethnic issue. This is a behavioral issue, and I don't think we should be rewarding behavior, throughout culture.
And a quick thought about behavior from you, Kate, before we go to break.
My experience in working with the LGBT community, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community, it is so much deeper than a behavior. It is so deeply rooted in who people are, and it's very difficult to quote unquote shift, and that is who people are down to the core. So,
but may take a short break here. We're going to come right back.
Sure.
I want to remind everybody the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7000. 7555. We will come back to Pam, who's driving on the road, and Ronald in Aberdeen, and Frankie in Ellicott City, who are all waiting to join this conversation with Kate Runyon from Equality Maryland and Doug Stigler from the Family Protection Lobby, talking about the gay marriage law passed in Vermont, how it affects the rest of the nation. 410-319-8888. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We are tackling the issue once again here on the Mark Steiner Show about same-sex marriage. We're joined in studio by Kate Runyon, who's Executive Director of Equality Maryland, and Doug Stigler, who's Executive Director of the Family Protection Lobby. Number is 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. And the question, we'll come back to the question of behavior versus a natural inclination that some people have. But let me open the phones first. 410-319-8888. Pam, on the road, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening.
Hi, Pam.
To you and your guests. I guess I want to say I am a heterosexual woman, and I don't have any problems with the gay and lesbian community. But what I will say is this. I just think this is just another form of racism. And when things don't conform to society, people have a problem with it. And then we have to go through this. I don't think lesbianism or gay is not a behavioral thing. And it just goes to show that, you know, your gentleman really doesn't know what he's talking about when he's talking about it like that. But I think everybody should have an opportunity to live in this world. We all pay taxes. We all have to follow the laws and obey the laws. And I congratulate Vermont for passing that law. And that's basically, I just had that comment. Thank you.
Pam, thanks so much for your comments. Let's go to one other caller before we go back to our guests at 410-319-8888. On our way to all of our callers, Ronald in Aberdeen, you're on the air.
And I would just like to say that that I disagree with same-sex marriage. There's a topic that we continually dance around, and that is God. And God created Adam and Eve. He did not create Adam and Steve. Another point that we have to look at is that our founding fathers who found this great country, they believed in God. And it just seems as though we turn away from that to satisfy ourselves and the things that we want to do, and then we bring children into it, and children are our future, and then we confuse them by not giving them a traditional family, which is having a mother and a father. So now you have a child saying, I have daddy and daddy, or I have mommy and mommy. And I think that, you know, it should not be recognized, in not only just in this state, but in this country. And that's just my opinion.
Ronald, thanks so much for your call. So we have a divided world in this subject. And let me read an email, and then I'd like the two of you to comment. All you've heard them will go to Don, who called back. We dropped him by mistake. Frankie in Ellicott City has called him. We'll get to that call as well. But much earlier, Sheldon wrote in, I've been reading a lot about Abraham Lincoln lately. In 1858, Lincoln delivered his house-divided speech during the first Lincoln-Douglas debates. That's the speech in which he declared that the country could not exist half slave and half free, that the United States would be one or all of the other. I think Iowa and Vermont show that the country is fast approaching the point at which the movement for gay marriage will be unstoppable. In its way, Prop 8 in California will hasten the day when marriage equality will be in the United States. As a lawyer, I think the most likely outcome of the pending California Supreme Court case will be to sustain the result of Prop 8, but to rule that Prop 8 is not retroactive. That will mean that there will be about 26,000 married gay couples in California, but no other gays will be allowed to marry there. Over time, the, quote, half-slave, half-free, end quote, situation will prove unsustainable. In time, and I don't think it will be long, a majority of Californians will recognize the absurdity and injustice of such a state of affairs and will reverse Prop 8. So we've had some feedback from some of our callers. We'll go back to them. Let me let both of you respond to our callers. Doug, you want to start, and we'll go to Kate.
Well, just on that one, If Prop 8 goes the way that emailer is saying, it just shows to me, and I think proves the fact that the judiciary is the problem in a lot of these issues, and not the people. And this country was founded of the people, by the people, and for the people, not for and by the judiciary. They created this problem. They could have done a whole lot smarter thing for California and for the rest of the country if they had said when that court said it was unconstitutional out there, they could have said, hey, we're going to hold this because we've got an election coming up and it's already going to be on the ballot. We're going to hold this off and have an injunction against those marriages until November and see what the people say. And once we get into an oligarchy, we're losing America, and we're losing our freedoms every day. We see it with what's happening in our tax laws. We're seeing it's what's happening in government taking over business and all of the things that are going on right now. We're losing this country as it was founded. And some people say that's a good thing because they don't like having rules and regulations and having traditions to follow. You talked earlier about Passover and the tradition of that and how that has been through the Jewish family. I mean, so much of the Old Testament, it talks about the word that's used so many times over and over and over is remember, remember, remember. Look back to the past. Look back to what has been. And we're not looking back. We're saying that we're going to look forward and we're going to change whatever we want to change to fit the desires of my emotion, my feelings, my desires, my sexual desires, whatever it is, trumps, remember. It trumps tradition. It trumps history. It trumps everything that's been good and right. Now, I'm not saying that everything that happened in the past has been right, but mm-hmm. we don't take all of it and throw it out and say that we're going to make a new world when we start looking at things like, you know, the European situation, the Canadian situation, where now pastors are being put in jail for saying that homosexuality is a sin. And if you have a biblical belief, those words are in the Bible. And that you're saying now that religion is no longer legal in America. That's basically what you're saying when you say we're going to teach it to your children in school and we're going to make it in your face, and you can't do anything about it if you're religious, and we're going to put you in jail if you say it and call it a hate crime.
So that's losing
the country.
Yeah. Dr. Taylor said a lot here. When I get back to the phones, but let me let you respond first.
Sure. What I'd like to bring up now, Mark, is a couple of things that you're well aware of as well, Doug, is a piece of legislation that we've been working on bringing forward in Maryland. And the legislation is specifically named Religious Freedom and Civil Marriage Protection Act. And the focus of that piece of legislation is to allow two people, regardless of their gender, to marry, so long as they were otherwise eligible to be married under Maryland law. But the really important part of this, which is exactly what I disagree with you about, Doug, is that it would also guarantee the freedom of religions and religious leaders to perform and honor only those marriages that are consistent with their religious tenets. So we're not asking for all the rules to be thrown out, but what we're asking for and what we'd like to move forward with is actually taking the rules and the systems that are in place currently right now and the rights and privileges that are afforded to heterosexual couples and to be able to apply those to same-sex couples as well. We're actually looking for those rules and regulations to be able to be applied to our relationships so that there can be validity and we have legal standing and we are not living as legal strangers, but instead we are equal in the eyes of the law.
Let me open the phones back and we'll come right back to Doug Stigler, who is Executive Director of the Family Protection Lobby. You've just heard Kate Runyon, who's Executive Director of Equality Maryland. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Don, you were dropped earlier, but we got you back. Go ahead. Sorry about that.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call real quick. I'm a heterosexual black male, and I do agree with the gentleman that it is a behavior. You know, one of the fundamental things when we start talking about this whole gay marriage issue is preference. Every gay person I've ever encountered and every conversation I've ever encountered talks about a sexual preference. By virtue of the fact that it's a preference, it is a behavior. And I totally reject one of the callers who said that she likened it to racism. And I reject that every time I hear that. Because let me tell you, as a black male, if I decide tomorrow that I now prefer men, then guess what? I can live out that preference. But as a black male, if I decide tomorrow I want to be an Italian or I want to be an original Orthodox Jew, I cannot live that out regardless how bad I want to. It is a preference. It is a behavior. And by the same token, those people who are who do call themselves gay, if a gay male decides one day to wake up and say, you know, I don't want this anymore. I now prefer women. And for the rest of my life, I want women. It is a preference. And therefore, lastly, it's a behavior. Thank you.
Thank you, Don. Let's go 410-319-8888. Again, back to our callers for a second. Frankie in Ellicott City, you're on the air.
Thank you for accepting my call. I believe that everybody has the right to do what they want to do. I am not gay. I've been married 3 times. But it's the thing is, to me, is that everybody has the right to pick their partner, even if it's a male or another woman. It's God's given right, and I believe that you should do that. If that's what you want to do, be respectful and allow that to happen. Don't say, oh, he's a flaming queer. That's not right. That's, I mean, some are flaming, but it's you have to respect, and God knows. Sometimes I look and I laugh and I say, "Hey, by the grace of God, there I go." But I'm not going that route. But you have to respect it, and that's my point.
Frankie, I appreciate your point. I'm glad you held on. Let's go to one more caller. Come right back to our guests, and then. Who's next in line here? Is Bobby in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Well, good evening, everyone. I just want to play the air out there because there are a lot of listeners out here who, and you may not believe it, but are really influenced by what these people are saying. I have gay friends on both sides, both lesbians and homosexuals, and I can honestly tell you that this is not a behavior. And that what I'm noticing is that this is the same fear that we have instilled in people about interracial marriages. I mean, if you really look at the reasons why they're saying gay people can't get married, they're applying it with the Bible. And we clearly have a separation of church and state. Now, that's a conversation for a whole other topic. However, if you take a look at what people are saying why gays can't marry, they're saying that it's going to mess up the values of family. Well, I have news people for you, Baltimore. Divorce messes up family. Divorce is the cause why families are the way that they are. And I feel that this is the fear that's going to keep us from a really good thing. Now, I'm not saying that I totally believe in homosexuality because that's not my place. Mm-hmm. My thing is this. I feel that we don't have the right to stifle anyone else's happiness, whether you feel that they're doing the right thing or not. And Bobby, that's all I have to say.
Bobby, thank you for your
behavior.
Thank you so much for your call. Kate and Doug, so let's talk about your response to what our listeners have just said.
Well, what I'm seeing is just a complete breakdown in understanding differences in worldview. Worldview is based on how you see the world through the eyes that you have and how you look at it. And when we take a worldview in the center that says here's where we are, that worldview creates our values, it changes, it looks at our attitudes, and it changes our behaviors. And if our worldview is through God's eyes and through the biblical eyes and through the traditional eyes that you mentioned earlier and that some of the people on the calls brought in, you have a worldview that has the value of saying that marriage is a man and a woman. The attitude is you love the homosexual and you say, you know, hey, we understand that you have some problems. We understand you have some different thoughts, but we can't have, a behavior that hurts all of society. If you take it from the other side and you look at a worldview that doesn't have God involved in it and doesn't have that value, you get a different value that says, as some of the callers have said, we have rights given by God. No, God didn't give those rights. God didn't give society rights to change his values. And so when we get that happens, then you get the different attitudes that say it's like slavery, using racism to equate to behavior, and then you get into the behavior that says, like the last caller, I can do anything I want to do.
Well, I'm going to come right back to you, but just because I want to make sure that we don't run out of time here, I want to let Kate respond to what she just heard. Kate Runyon.
Sure. A couple different things. It's so important to remember that
I think, as Bobby brought forward, too, in talking about fear, that these issues are real human beings and real people. And I'm going to share a little bit personally. You know, I grew up in a family with a mom and a dad, and my parents are still married, and they were married in the 60s, and they've had a very long and wonderful committed relationship. And all that I look for in life, and I've been aware of myself being attracted to women since I was very, very young, probably about 8 years old and so forth. And that is my life journey, and that is part of who I am. And all that I ask for, and for other same-sex people in the state of Maryland and in the country as well, is that we are able to move forward with our lives and to have protections and go forward. And there's nothing about me being in love with another human being that should hurt any relationship that you have, Doug, with a woman or anyone else out there. There are so many different relationships that I've seen within the heterosexual community that I could look negatively upon in lieu of how children are raised or the number of divorces people have or whatever it may be. But I don't do that. I don't hold that judgment against other folks that have other ways of living their life and so forth. So it's really important to remember that these are real human beings with current lives, and we're not going to change those lives. And having a debate about whether it's behavior or not at this point in time, I think, is a moot point. We need to go forward.
No, it's the whole point.
Doug, we're going to come back to this on another day, and I appreciate Doug Stigler, you coming in at the last minute, and as well as Kate Runyon coming in today. As
sure.
We decide we want to do the show, we'll have you both back on. This debate's going to continue, and I appreciate you both being part of the show today.
Sure,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you, Kate, and just believe that I do not have anything against you personally. I know heterosexual women who live together.
I'm sorry, but we really are out of time.
Thank you.
I want to thank all of our callers for calling in. We will come back to this.
We'll do it.
When we take this brief break, coming back in our second hour, we're going to be joined by Dr. Andres Alonso, who is CEO of the Baltimore City Public School System, to take all your calls and questions about our city schools, our students and teachers. Stay with us. We'll be right back.